All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Flurries on Films. This week, we're talking about the film City Lights.
Hit the music.
Hello, everybody. My name is Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty.
And this is a film called City Lights. And if you don't know what that is, don't worry. I'm going to tell you the description right now. With the aid of a wealthy, erratic tippler. Is that a word?
Sure.
A dewy-eyed tramp who has fallen in love with a sightless flower girl accumulates money to be able to help her medically.
What a weirdly
worded plot summary.
IMDb. Don't blame me.
Gay Colleen. Let me hear your plot summary. One sentence.
A tramp falls helplessly in love with a blind girl and does everything he can to help her.
Here's mine. A guy does some Looney Tunes shtick for an hour. I think mine's better.
An hour and 40 minutes.
Mine was like 30 minutes. 20 minutes?
Something. It felt, whatever it was too
long. Sure. Hey, Colleen.
Yeah?
You're my sister. Fact one. Fact two, what'd you think of the film?
How is that a fact? It's just a question.
Well, you're about to fill in the rest of it.
Here's the fact about what I thought of this film.
Yeah.
So, last week, we watched The Searchers, and that was terrible.
It was a week ago.
And so now we're watching City, which also I had not heard of, but apparently is Charlie Chaplin's most famous film. Sure.
I thought The Dictator was his most, the one where he does the speech as Hitler.
But I guess he has to, I guess
isn't
his
that
silent,
a, it is a famous movie, right?
Sure. Okay. Sure. But, you know, he's known for silent film. He directed it, composed the music, whatever. So, sure, it was fine. So, The Searchers made me angry. This didn't make me angry. This was like, okay, silent film is important to film history, so that's why it's high up on the list, and I don't really get it, but sure, fine, whatever. It felt a little too long. It was cute. It wasn't funny.
No.
The plot was really simple, but it would diverge into totally unnecessary scenes. Like, this movie could have been a half an hour long and done the same thing.
What do you mean unnecessary scenes?
Like the boxing.
But that's the whole point of the film. It's just like, let's think of a scenario after scenario for him to be kind of a doofus.
Right. We'll get in more into this.
So I was like, you say unnecessary. I'm like, but that's what they were trying to do.
Okay. So a lot of... We're going to read a lot of critics later.
Yeah.
Who say the thing about this film that's so great is that it's like there's some just amazing pathos with the comedy.
Wait, hold on. I don't actually know what the word pathos means.
So all that means is like a quality of sadness or...
What?
Yeah. So I think it's like we feel for this character, but it's funny. And it's like, no, I don't. Because he's a cartoon character in a real person's world.
He is a cartoon character.
So
exactly.
I don't actually... care about him.
No,
like I don't buy him as a real person.
Yeah, when he fucking slurps up the balloon as a noodle, you're like, oh, what a sad character.
Right. Or yeah. But so yeah, I mean it's fine for what it is, but it doesn't make me angry as angry as The Searchers. So that's my feelings. What are your feelings?
I hate it. Let's go to our first segment. Bam!
Time for Sam!
And she's gonna tell us facts about the film.
You just hate it?
No, anyway. It's fine.
So yay, another Charlie Chaplin film.
Do you like that or dislike it?
Dislike. Oh, I hate that you guys keep having me research Charlie Chaplin.
We didn't choose him, to be fair.
Yeah.
I guess that's fair, but I have no one else to blame but you.
Can I have a positive fact? This is the last silent film we'll ever have to watch.
Yes, I'm never going to watch a silent film in my life.
No. I've done it. We've done the work.
We've earned it.
Well, that leads into my first fact. So sound was becoming a thing in Hollywood.
Whoa. Sound.
Yeah.
Novel idea.
It was pretty crazy. Charlie Chaplin was convinced that it was a trend. So he decided that despite almost all films having sounds at this point, he was still going to do a silent film. Mostly due to the fact that he still had a lot of pull in Hollywood, he was allowed to make a silent film. The movie would be his longest undertaking at almost 3 years to make it.
Why? What? Yeah.
I have a lot into that, but hold on. Okay. However, halfway through filming, Chaplin decided, this is one of the reasons, that talkies were going to stick around, and he decided to incorporate some sound into this film. So at the beginning of the film, a town official and a woman dedicating the statue can be heard uttering nondescript words by way of a paper wreath mouth instrument.
I like a kazoo type instrument.
Yeah. The sounds were made by Charlie Chaplin, and this was the first time that his voice was heard on film.
Wow.
Okay.
Charlie Chaplin had interviewed several actresses to play the blind flower girl and was unimpressed with all of them.
What qualifications do you need?
He actually, okay, so he really wanted someone who could act blind.
Yeah.
She right. did seem blind, I guess.
Actually, I have a nice thing to say about that later.
It's kind of funny for me as a person who is pretty much blind.
Here's why I'm laughing. Because, like, oh, I really need the authenticity of, like, a real disabled person. Like, it's a stupid comedy film with Looney Tune antics. Like, why does he really need that?
I think he's trying to... I think he was trying to make a serious comedy. Like, a comedy that also had a love story you cared about.
100%. He really believed in this story. This slapstick is his, like, own thing. That's just, like, his style. But this was meant to be serious.
Yeah, so... Sorry.
Okay, so let's going back. So, so he was trying to find the blind girl, couldn't find her. And then while seeing a film shoot with bathing women in Santa Monica, he found a casual acquaintance, Virginia Churl. Churl waved and asked if she would ever get a chance to work with him, and he invited her to do a screen test. She was the first actress to subtly and convincingly act blind, and this was due to her nearsightedness, which I can relate to. As a person who can't see without my glasses, like, I'm sure I look crazy.
You're like Velma.
Exactly. I probably look crazy, and so did she, and so he signed her
right
away.
That's a Scooby-Doo reference for those at home who didn't get it.
If you've ever seen Scooby-Doo, it's a cartoon.
So although this movie only took 180 days to shoot, it was incredibly delayed and incredibly expensive. Like, I'm talking in excess of $1.5 million.
How?
This was mainly due to Chaplin.
Was it the car crash scene or all the CGI that cost the money?
Chaplin kept his cast and crew on standby for 22 months. They only filmed for 180 days. So
180 days sounds like a lot, actually.
That's half a year.
Yeah.
A year is 12 months.
It feels
he kept
like
him
they
on
could do
for
this
22
film in
months.
A month.
Oh, 100%. But
how
there
many
was
months
are
in a year?
12.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're welcome. So there
Sam
was...
and I eagerly answered.
I know.
So there were a lot of delays. Okay, so we have to think of the time period. So you had the stock exchange crash, which took some time, apparently.
Sure.
There was the realization that sound was going to be a thing, so that took some time. And then also his mother died, so that was, you know, some time. But also, he is a huge perfectionist, which I'm sure we all
Well, that's
remember.
Why the movie is perfect.
So in one Michael's very memorable scene, the little tramp buys a flower from the blind flower girl. Chaplin took 342 takes. Before he felt like he had found a satisfactory way of showing that the blind girl thought the mute tramp was wealthy.
That actually was not that convincing. But maybe if I was a purveyor of silent film watchers at the time.
It didn't need to be that convincing. It's a stupid comedy film. It doesn't need to be that convincing.
This is his art. I don't know why I'm defending Chaplin. He's an awful person. I don't know why. Sorry. Yeah. So anyways, just like... So all these big things are going on in the world, but then also he's just a perfectionist. And he and Cheryl, we're going to go with that for her last name, did not get along. So according to Cheryl, this was because I was 20 and Charlie liked them younger.
Ew.
Yep, I don't like that.
Don't worry, we like Cheryl because here's the thing. At one point, Cheryl came back to the set late from an appointment. She made Charlie Chaplin wait. And in case you didn't know this, you don't make Charlie Chaplin wait.
Oh, cool.
So he fired her immediately.
Okay.
Which he did apparently a bunch. One person, the millionaire, wouldn't jump into a pool, so he fired him too. Like, which also probably added to the time. But anyways.
Which is what any asshole person would do if they're sick with power.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So he fired her. And he intended to reshoot the film with Georgia Hale, who we know from The Gold Rush.
Which I liked much more than this film.
Refresh me, Gold Rush.
Gold Rush was when he was in the little cabin because they'd found the gold. Remember? And she
the
was...
The roll dance?
That. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, got it, got it, got it.
So anyways, he Klondike. Even reshot yeah. the final scenes with her in the role of the Flower Girl. However, he had spent too much time and too much money to start over with a brand new actress. So knowing this, Cheryl offered to come back to work, but demanded double her salary. And nice. Chaplin had no... He had to do it. Like, there was nothing else he
Fuck
could do.
Fuck yeah.
So
Love
she
it.
Got double Good the money.
Fact.
So
Good fucking fact.
Yeah, she's freaking awesome. Okay.
Good thing he died porn alone. Oh, wait. No, he didn't. Anyway.
Ugh. Oh, I really can't get into his family
All right,
history.
All right, go on, go on, go on. Sorry.
Okay. So one of the biggest scenes was the famous boxing match. Apparently.
That's the famous scene?
Apparently, I am learning that boxing is very big in Hollywood at that time.
Oh, actually, that was... I hated that scene because I felt like it was unnecessary fodder, but I did like the cute dance thing.
I kind of feel like boxing is perpetually a thing in Hollywood with Rocky and Raging Bull and such.
Actually, the number one sport, if you like were to look at...
Baseball!
If you looked at every movie, the number one sport is boxing. You would assume it's baseball.
I would assume it's boxing.
But it is
movies.
Boxing. Yeah, I mean, look at high on our list is Raging Bull, which I'm told is a boxing movie.
That is that also good. Sylvester Stallone?
No, it's Robert De Niro.
Oh, didn't know that.
Am I right? Oh, I hope
yeah,
I'm
you're 100% right. Okay. But if we're looking like at this list, how many baseball movies have you watched?
Zero.
And boxing? Two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, boxing was a big thing. Anyways, so to quote Cheryl, the filming of the boxing scene was the only social life we had at the studio. Charlie must have had over 100 extras present, and he was nervous about like not having enough people on the set. So he encouraged his friends in town to come and watch. Everyone loved boxing in Hollywood in those days. And Charlie was so funny in the ring. The boxing scenes became sort of a party at the studio. Charlie loved every minute of it.
That does sound fun.
So apparently like he had the audience to kind of play off of. And he just kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was many days of shooting. So the extras would actually go out, tell all their friends about it. And their friends would come in and be like, oh, my God, I want to see this, too. And it became like this big event. And then he got bigger and bigger as more people to feed off of. So it became kind of almost like a party.
Fun.
This is Charlie Chaplin's personal favorite film of his. He's especially fond of the final scene. He said, in City Lights, just the last scene, I'm not acting. Almost apologetic, standing outside myself and looking. It's a beautiful scene. Beautiful. And because it isn't overacted.
Okay, this is a weird thing to say, but a lot of the City Lights, or the final scene, he smiles at her and he is actually kind of an attractive guy behind the tramp costume, but his smile is so creepy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, weirdly creepy.
Well, 40% of his movie is doing, like, this cute, like...
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He's right, doing I'm the act. Tramp who can't walk properly. Right.
But all the cute, like, smiling he does is always creepy.
Yeah.
I've creeped out by him so much in this film. All right, yeah. Please continue. I'm sorry, Sam.
So at the premiere, Charlie Chaplin invited Albert Einstein and his wife, Elsa. And Wait. They were like...
Because I'm an idiot. Albert Einstein is alive at this time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a person? When was he born?
So to give you an idea, like he was this. A German Jew who was, you know, he
left because of the Nazis.
Yeah. Does that help?
Yeah, it does.
Place
help.
Him.
Okay.
I was trying to think of the word. What, you know,
he was born in 1879.
Okay. Okay.
And he died in 1955.
Okay. So he's a real person.
So he's a real person. So he's really married.
Yeah.
And he was invited as the guest of honor.
He's kind of a dick to his wife, but that's another.
Apparently, when the house lights came on after the end of the movie, Charlie Chaplin was surprised to see Einstein's eyes were full of tears. Chaplin said in his autobiography that he had not known Einstein to be so sentimental.
Maybe he's a fucking idiot. That's what I think.
Probably.
This movie is the all-time favorite movie of two directors we have and will see on this list, Orson Welles and Stanley Kubrick.
My favorite people.
And
Orson Welles.
Yeah, my question for you here.
Oh, yay.
For the week. This movie does make an appearance on the AFI Top 10.
Oh, boy.
Romantic comedies. Where does it fall on the list?
Oh, boy.
Oh, I was going to guess zero.
Follow along at home. But...
For the record, When Harry Met Sally is on the list. Thank God.
Thank God.
Right.
All right. I've guessed my number.
I've guessed mine as well.
Mine is 9.
2.
Cleans right. This
yes
is your number 1 romantic comedy
Boo.
Film.
That sucks.
It's clearly When Harry Met Sally.
Which is very high up on the
Just
list.
Just because I actually don't know. If you had to give a 2 and 3, what would it be?
Ooh. Okay. When Harry Met Sally. Oh, for romantic comedies.
Yeah,
of
for
all time.
Romantic
Sleepless
comedies.
Sleepless in Seattle. Because I'm like such a Nora Ephron fan.
Sleepless in Seattle is number 10.
That's acceptable.
What's the third one?
Oh my God. You're putting me on the spot. Because now I'm like conflating romantic comedies with 10 Things I Hate About You.
Not
I love
list.
That movie.
I will tell
well,
you.
I'm talking about what you think should be on the list.
Right. But I will tell you this. Out of the top 5, 4 of them are movies you've already seen on this list.
Pretty Woman. Only because of the cultural landscape. And you know what? No. I'm trying to defend it, but I love it. No. Definitely Pretty Woman.
Sam, would you agree with Colleen's assessment?
Come on. If you're like cultural landscape, romantic comedies, what have shaped what we know as romantic comedies, definitely Pretty Woman.
Wouldn't put it in top 10.
That's crazy.
I would put When Harry Met Sally. I would put Sleepless in Seattle.
What is the top 10?
I would also put in Princess Bride.
So is that your third? I wanted 3.
I don't think it's a strict genre film, Princess Bride.
I think it could be in multiple genres and it should not be.
But then that's
be,
like, okay. And then
it should
like,
not be eliminated from romantic comedies just because it can also be an action.
Disagree. It has to be a strict genre film for a romantic comedy list. But anyway, let's.
Michael. Can I have you guess what number 2 is on this actual top 10 romantic comedy? And you have seen this film in the 100 that you've watched so far.
Titanic.
No, Titanic is not in the top 10.
Something fucking
well, that's
dumb
not a comedy, I guess. That's fair.
It is Annie Hall. Number 3 is It Happened One Night.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Where she rolled up her skirt to get the car to stop.
That was
very
hilarious.
Funny. Very good.
Number 4 is Roman Holiday, which is not on the list, but should be. It's Audrey Hepburn. And
yeah,
it's
also
that.
Not funny.
I hear about that film a lot.
When he sticks his hand in and pretends like it was.
Oh, my God. It's so funny.
It's so funny.
I like that movie, but it's not funny.
She's so wrong. Then number 5 is Philadelphia Story.
I do like that movie.
Oh, yeah. That
When Harry Met Sally. Number 7, I've never heard of. Adam's Rib.
Nope. It sounds dumb, though.
Number 8, Bring Me Some Cher from Moonstruck.
I love Moonstruck.
Never seen it.
Number 9 is
it's
Harold
Nicolas
and
Cage
Maude.
As a romantic lead, but he's so fucking weird. Michael, it's great. It's a great movie.
And number sounds 10, good. Sleepless in Seattle. So, number 1, though, City Lights.
You've been slacked like crazy, dude.
Sorry.
My last fact for you guys today is that The Tramp is listed as number 38 in the hero list on the AFI.
That's sure. That's fair that because that sounds really low or really high, rather.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sam.
That was BAM time for Sam.
Let's go to our next segment.
Oh,
where we hear from some discerning
folks. I forgot we were doing a podcast, honestly.
Let's hear some discerning folks about what they think about the film City Lights.
Sure, let's
Michael, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I will. City Lights is excruciatingly funny and terribly, terribly sad. All right. It makes you chuckle hysterically. You have the greatest time imaginable. And yet, occasionally, you find the little hurdy lumps in your throat. And that's from Irene. Thier.
New York Daily News. Sure. We were trying to get our teenagers interested in silent films, and most specifically Charlie Chaplin. We started with The Kid, went to A Dog's Life, both were very much enjoyed. Then Gold Rush, they really liked that movie. Progressing on The Circus, we still had them hooked. We should have stopped there. Halfway through City Lights, we lost them, and they ended up stopping the movie. Oh well, said Kevin. I gotta say, so we've seen Modern Times and Gold Rush. I did actually kind of like those movies. And I think it's because it was just Charlie Chaplin fun antics. Like, you know, he was like on skates and he almost fell down.
Yeah,
they
were even more gimmicky. The house was falling over the cliff.
Right. Or, you know, he went through the machine and that was fun. So this movie, most of the time, we don't get to see his funny antics. Like, we're trying to be invested in this story that I don't care about. So, yeah, this is my least favorite Charlie Chaplin movie we've seen.
With its themes of selflessness and grace, those are two prominent themes of this film, as well as its graceful intertwining of comedy and pathos, which is a word. This is a fine time for a revisit. That's from Michael Phillips of the Chicago Tribune.
Wow. Yeah, I think douches really like to use the word pathos. Anyway, this is a review from Lacey.
Yeah, what
Amazon
she say?
Reviewer.
What does she say?
I really hated it.
Michael? All right, that's a pretty good review. City Lights is a pian.
I don't know what that word is.
It's P-A-E-A-N. Pean. Oh, uh-oh. Uh-oh. I'm looking at the Google Doc. It's very edited. Okay, here we go. City Lights is a PIA to our best impulses, a plea for humanitarianism and justice.
Pian. Pian.
Pian.
Which is a strong praise or triumph.
And that's from Dan Jardin.
Plea for humanitarianism?
That's what I saw in this film.
Sure. City Lights tries to turn pathos into comedy, or is it the other way around? Well, the pathos does seem to work because of the trick of letting the heroine be blind, and therefore she doesn't know that her love is a tramp, but there's very little to laugh about in this film. Admitted, Charlie Chaplin is a great filmmaker, kind of very visual, but he is simply not funny, said Bjorn.
And that was Critics Corner, which is a great segment.
And Mikey, what was your favorite and least favorite part?
You go first because you wrote yours down.
Sure. I guess my favorite part is the antics because it was the best executed part of the film.
Explain the antics then.
So like he does silly walks and he's eating pasta, but then suddenly he's eating a balloon. And
that's pretty
you know,
funny.
Like it's cute and it's very like he is a physical actor and he does that well. But it does kind of undermine him being a real hero because he doesn't seem like a human person.
No, it's a cartoon movie.
Yeah. Well, no, because he's a cartoon, but the people, like, his love interest seems like a real person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a cartoon in a real world. It's a Space Jam situation.
Okay, that's your favorite? I'll say my favorite then to follow you up.
Sure.
So here's my favorite part. The jokes seem to always be at Charlie Chaplin's expense. So unlike the Marx Brothers, who will just like hit someone and that's the joke. So when the blind character was introduced, I'm like, all right, here we go. We're going to have a lot of like, oh, I'm going to hang my coat up on a person because I can't see. Ha ha ha. I'm disabled. But actually, she was portrayed just like an actual blind person with not a lot of jokes interweaved with that.
I did like
that. And actually, it's like, oh, that's really nice. And when I can tell like, oh, this is a joke. It's always Charlie Chaplin is being stupid.
I do like that, actually.
So that's
nice.
That's really good, actually.
Way to think about that answer.
Yeah, thank you.
What's your least favorite part?
This film made me reevaluate what I think about silent films, right? Because I don't like silent films at all, and I don't ever want to see one again. But when I think about it, like, oh, well, that's just me being, you know, unsophisticated, you know? People in the 30s, of course, they would love silent films because, you know, they didn't know any better or it was a completely different culture. It was 90 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it just makes me wonder, like, maybe people 90 years ago are not that different to us, right? Because I was looking at other films that came out around this time, which is why I knew the difference earlier with The Wizard of Oz. But I was looking at, like, Double Indemnity, right? Which is a film I really like.
10 years later, yeah.
Yeah, genuinely like. That's 10 years later, right? It was 10 years later, and then 80 years later is when we are. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I wonder if people then, there's some people 10 years later who saw Double Indemnity is like, oh, yeah, silent films are kind of dumb, aren't they? Do you know what I mean?
People could just die.
Like, it's actually possible. Well, here's my first point is that, like, it's actually possible that people then were like, silent films are actually not that good. Like, the sound is really good. Because my second point is, like, sound is not some kind of, like, nice accessibility feature we have. There is actually artistic value to voices. Do you know what I mean?
So you're a pro people talking in films.
It's not that I think they make the films better, but it's not like films that don't have videos like, oh, well, you have to really understand the sophistication. There is sophistication and depth and nuance and all those good words to voices.
I would say there's more.
There's
I think great screenwriting is what makes movies great.
Here's what I'm saying. So I always think of silent films as the thing from long ago that's great, but I just don't understand it. Now I think it's that's probably still true, but films now are still equally as artistic or much more so.
Can I pile on what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is I think it's a bullshit way to be sophisticated. Like, I think it's a stupid way to feel superior liking silent films. Yeah. Because I don't think they are, they don't have a dimension them that are actually more sophisticated. Because the thing about silent films, sure, they laid the groundwork for modern films. Sure, Charlie Chaplin maybe was a genius or whatever. But it is just silly physicality or over-the-top physicality that made it great. So that's not a sophisticated thing. That is the most base way you can enjoy a film.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you're like, well, silent films, that's the best they could do at the time. What the fuck are you talking about?
My only they didn't need to.
My only point is, silent films were a necessary step in the evolution of all filmmaking. Yes, some people did great works with what they had, but it's like, even though if that's all true, maybe they're not that great. Like, even back then, they're not that great.
I'm annoyed that Charlie Chaplin was like, this is a phase. Silent film is the true form of cinema. Like, sorry, Bam, did you have a comment? Is that not right?
No, that's spot on. It just feels very much like you're mocking one of my favorite films coming up on the list, which is Singing in the Rain.
That's going to be so great. We're going to have so many opinions about that.
I'm just saying that feels like a quote directly from it.
Well, but I feel like they're making fun of that sentiment in that film. So
they are, yes.
And I'm excited for that, to talk about that with you. Anyway.
So I just this film is worse than Star Wars, but not just because it's later, not just because it has our sensibilities, but because maybe silent films maybe just are worse.
But again, this is actually my least favorite silent film. Even that 3-hour silent film had so much more artistic interest than this film to me, because all you have is visuals and this barely had any.
But I think the silent films I do like, and maybe you can contradict me, but the silent films I do like have gimmicks. They have big stuff that moves around. It's like, oh, that's kind of fun that it moves around like that.
Obviously, because all you have is the visual medium.
So it's not it's not deep.
No.
That's my only point.
No, it's a stupid idea that you have to be bored and confused for it to be great art. Right. But
I don't think we're on different levels.
No, we just sound angry. So it seems like we're arguing.
Yeah. Which you could tell because of our voices.
The podcast is
so
a great
that was
example.
My least favorite part is that it made me rethink of silent films as a lesser art form.
My least favorite was the comedy, because there wasn't anything that made me laugh at all.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to
be. I do believe that people in the 20s or the 30s rather did see this and laugh.
Also, it felt too long, and it wasn't that long, but it felt very long. And I didn't understand why it was called City Lights. That was not clear. I guess they were in a city, but there was nothing about it that seemed like it should be City Lights.
I mean, the plot just meanders, it's just all over the place.
Yeah.
It's not even worth following. Anyway,
but we're going to tell you all about the plot.
Here's our next segment where we need to go through the plot of the film.
You want to start us off?
Oh, sure. The film opens with city officials unveiling a new statue. When they lift the sheet, they find our lovable tramp sleeping on
it. So what Michael was saying, how it just kind of meanders, or what I was saying about how it's so long. So that opening shot, they have city officials come out and they give speeches, but do a kazoo voice. A man gives a kazoo voice speech. A woman gives a speech. Then they lift up the veil and there's a statue. This never comes into play in any way. We spend so much time on this for no reason. Is that fair?
My real least favorite part of the film is that I have a terrible time staying focused on things. So when people are having a conversation, as in their mouths are moving, but no sound of their voices is actually playing, it is such a challenge to pay attention.
Yeah.
To keep focused on this movie. I mean,
is it too much to reveal on this podcast that we both have ADHD?
It should have come across at this point, honestly.
This movie was I felt like if I was in the same room as this movie, it counted as watching it, but I did.
I was next to the movie. I don't know if I saw it.
Maybe I had to leave the room briefly for a drink, but I got it.
I get the point.
It was so hard to pay attention to. I'm sorry.
It's Oh, it's much better than the previous week's film.
Yes.
By 1,000 times, but yes. It's still difficult. There's a lot of slapstick as he tries to get off. For instance, he gets off one of the hands of the statue and a sword goes up his pants.
And then he like leans into the finger so it looks like he's thumbing them.
I didn't get what the joke was exactly.
So the joke, I can't do it because this is not a visual medium, yeah. But he put... So it seemed like he was putting his thumb to his nose, which is a rude gesture back in the day.
Oh, I didn't know that gesture.
Yeah. But it wasn't clear to me why he had to do that, like how he accidentally did that. But anyway.
Right. It's like him slurping up the balloon as a noodle. It's like.
You know it's not a fucking noodle.
1 second after he does it, he's like, oh, should I add that in my mouth?
That but was
he does
plastic.
It. But he does it for like 5 minutes. It's like, oh, this is still a wacky scenario.
Yeah.
It's just all stupid. Okay, from there, we have an odd scene of our hero checking out a nude statue.
It was long. He, like, went up to the... He's like, look at that elephant, but look at that nude statue. I'm gonna pretend I'm looking at the elephant because I'm really checking out the nude statue. And it's like, that's weird, man.
I promise I've watched this film, but I don't remember that.
It was oddly long.
Okay,
it's weird
I
you
believe
don't remember
you.
That.
I promise I watched this yesterday. Okay, so here we go. The plot... And this statue has nothing to do with anything.
No. It's two statue plots that don't come back.
The plot really gets going when he stumbles upon a blind girl selling flowers who he becomes smitten with.
That evening, he saves a drunk rich guy from killing himself with a very sensitive and
before
nuanced...
Before we talk about that, do we feel like maybe this girl is the same kind of girl who's in all Charlie Chaplin movies? Because I barely remember the other Charlie Chaplin movies, but I feel like it's the same character dynamic.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a Hitchcock situation, right? Like,
what do you mean by that?
Oh, Hitchcock always had pretty blonde young girls who look the same.
The girl is like, yeah, it's the same type of girl. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe I'm being
that's probably right.
Weirdly classificational. That's
no, I agree with you there. But it also might be a Hollywood thing at the time. It's hard. I haven't seen it.
Well, I mean, Charlie Chaplin sounds like he has a lot of power from Bam Time from Sam.
Yeah, he also is the worst.
He's a fucking dick.
Right, so. And he probably would typecast just girls he's attracted to. So that sounds right.
Probably.
Okay, so that evening saves a drunk rich guy from killing himself with a very sensitive and nuanced look at mental illness. So this guy, first of all, I don't know if this is a normal way to kill yourself, and I'm so sorry at home if you feel offended by this, but he tied a rope to a rock and then tied a noose around his neck to put in the river? Mm-hmm. That seems like a really weird way to kill yourself.
Really weird.
But Charlie Chaplin saves from that, and he says, the birds are going to sing tomorrow. Man up, get over this. And he's like, okay, we're best friends now.
Here's another thing about maybe silent films are bad, not just because we're idiots, because maybe they're bad.
Because maybe you need people talking.
I felt like that millionaire, if that was a vocal speaking part, he might have been really fun. Because he seemed like kind of a crazy character, you know?
Yeah.
But there's not really anything to like about him when he doesn't speak.
Yes. But the cards of him trying to talk him out of suicide seem so dumb and
very
silly.
Very insensitive.
For somebody who's like clearly going through something and wants to kill himself. But look, it's a slapstick comedy, sure, but a lot of the critics are trying to say that he so perfectly balanced this pathos and this
any critic
this...
or any fucking person trying to say this plot has any real life anything is fucking dumb, because this is just stupid antic one after the other,
right?
Whatever plot thing happened doesn't actually matter,
right? So anyway, drunk guy takes his new best friend out in the town where the tramp seems to not know how to walk because he always walks like a penguin. He accidentally eats a balloon string, and then there's some hilarious drunk driving.
Yeah.
I was doing a bit there, but it was kind of funny because he's like, whoa boy, you should watch your driving. He's like, oh, am I driving? It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
After helping the millionaire home, the tramp sees the flower girl, borrows some money from his buddy, and buys all of her flowers and drives her home in the millionaire's Rolls Royce.
Let's establish the girl just likes him because he's rich, right?
Yeah. That's how you get ladies.
That's how you get ladies. Oh, hold on, one second.
So yeah.
After the tramp leaves, the flower girl tells her grandmother about the kind and wealthy friend. Meanwhile, the tramp returns to the mansion, where the millionaire, now sober, does not remember him and has him thrown out.
This is a really weird plot device that's very important, where the drunk guy remembers him when he's drunk, but forgets him when he's sober. So he'll get drunk and he'll be like, oh, I remember you from earlier.
It's very funny.
It reminds me of, have you ever seen the show Happy Endings?
No. I saw one episode.
Oh, so there's a plot device where she only knows the how to speak Italian when she's drunk.
That's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny.
Later that day, the millionaire is once more intoxicated, and seeing the tramp on the street invites him home for a lavish party.
Because, again, he only knows him when he's drunk.
Which is very funny. But the next morning, history repeats itself. The millionaire is again sober, and the tramp is again out on his ear.
Finding that the girl is not at her usual street corner, the tramp goes to her apartment, where he overhears a doctor tell the grandmother the girl is very ill. Determined to help, the tramp takes a job as a street sweeper, which makes it seem like he could have had a job pretty easily this whole time.
That's weird that he got jobs so fast. Can I tell you my real favorite part of this film?
Yes.
It's the one part of the film where I'm like, whoa, all right. The grandmother is cutting up some bread, right? And she has this huge loaf of bread, right?
Uh-huh.
And she has this big knife, and she is cutting the bread so slowly.
Okay.
It's like so slow.
Is that the whole thing?
It's the whole bit. It was so slow.
You're laughing too hard.
It was a comical piece of bread. It was very funny.
I don't think it was supposed to be funny.
Maybe. I mean, you know, are you from the 20s?
No. But, okay, so just the whole, there's a line through this movie about, like, he's a tramp. Like, the newsboys make fun of him. People make fun
Question.
Of him.
Question.
Yes.
What is a tramp?
You know, like a poor guy? I don't know.
Poor man.
Yeah, like, he's poor and he lives on the streets and he, you know. But, you know, because the opening, he's like sleeping on a statue because... Yes, Sam?
A tramp is a person who travels from place to place on foot in search of work, or a beggar.
Right. So he's like a beggar, but, like, it's clear. So he feels like he's put upon by society for being a tramp. But he could have easily just gotten a job,
yeah.
Which I think also happens in some of his other films where, oh, yeah, he could just get a job.
He's a lovable
character. Or he could just
character.
Not be bad at his job and be fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's you, man.
Where are we at?
On his lunch break.
On his lunch break, he brings the girl groceries while her grandmother is out selling flowers. To entertain her, he reads a newspaper aloud where there's a convenient story about a Viennese doctor's blindness cure. He also finds an eviction notice the girl's grandmother has hidden. As he leaves, he promises the girl that he will pay the rent. The tramp returns to work to find himself fired. He has been late once too often.
That's probably why he's a tramp. Just
go was that explained why he was late all the time?
It wasn't. It like, was why was he... Yeah, once too often is what they said. It's like, didn't he just get this job?
Yeah.
Absurd. Also, why are they having an extra motive? Like, why wouldn't he just earn money to get the blindness surgery?
You're thinking way too much about this plot.
I am.
Nothing matters.
Because apparently we're supposed to.
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes this film so much greater than his other films.
Nah, it's anyway, stupid.
In a bizarre and unnecessary plot diversion, a boxer convinces him to fight in a fake bout.
This is the pivotal scene.
They will go easy on each other and split the prize money. But the boxer flees on learning he's about to be arrested and is replaced by another fighter who knocks the tramp out. Despite the tramp's creative and nimble efforts to keep out of reach. It is actually fun. They do like a little dance on.
So was this film made after the Charlie Chaplin films that we like more?
Yeah, I think so.
That's crazy. Because this feels worse. The tramp encounters the drunken millionaire a third time and is again invited to the mansion. The tramp relates the girl's plight and the millionaire gives him money for her operation. Two burglars knock the millionaire out and flee with the rest of the money. The police find the tramp with the money given to him by the millionaire,
oh, no.
Who, because of the knock on the head, does not remember giving it. The tramp evades the police long enough to get the money to the girl, telling her that he will be going away for a long time, and then gets arrested.
Boy, oh boy. By the way, I lied to you. Modern Times came out after this.
Oh, okay.
But
that makes sense.
Modern Times is a little more, they had a little more of a like a workers' rights thing, which I liked, but still more.
More of the set pieces is what you liked.
I really liked. I liked him in the little.
When he's roller skating around in the mall.
Loved it.
That's great.
That was great. Months later, the tramp is released. He goes to the girl's customary street corner, but she's not there. We learn that the girl, with her sight restored, now runs a busy flower shop with her grandmother. The girl sees the tramp through the window, smiles, and super normally says, "I've made a conquest." That was such a weird... Anyway. Yeah. She offers him a fresh flower and after a time realizes who he is. He says, "You can see now?" And she says, "Yes, I can see now."
So,
the end.
So to recount the story, a girl finds a guy who could pay for everything. And then at the end, she realizes, actually, he's poor. Second, he looks like Charlie Chaplin in a bowler hat and a Hitler mustache.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy ending.
Yay.
Second, we skipped the blindness cure. Is that something
you
we
said the Viennese blindness.
I mean, no, we
don't
read
know what it.
It
is?
We didn't comment on it.
Yeah.
Do we have any comments about the blindness cure?
How that's probably not a thing?
Probably. Are you saying there might be a cure for blindness out there?
I mean, I'm saying that there are probably like nowadays things that make people go blind that you can cure that are, you know what I mean?
Are you speaking out your ass right now?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
I'm saying I've seen a lot of episodes of House, so I know a lot about the medical
people get lupus, right? That's
no,
one.
People don't get lupus.
People don't get lupus. I clearly did not watch the show. So now we're going to call our brother John.
Who is so excited.
And he's going to have a lot more things to say about this classic movie. Picture, I should say.
Hello.
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 We're talking about the film City Lights. Have you seen it? What do you think?
I have a question and a statement. Question is, was it funny?
No.
Right. The statement was, this is over Star Wars?
Oh, John.
Fuck the AFI.
You should have been with Michael and I when we were watching Searchers. We just kept yelling at it for not being Star Wars.
John, what's your favorite moment of Star Wars? What's your favorite line?
Wait, in any movie?
No. A New Hope.
Fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station.
That's a good line.
I love watching. I think it's the second film where John loves it when he goes, "Good, our first catch of the day."
Good, our first catch of the day.
I like how we just like what John likes.
That's a younger siblings thing, probably.
I like what Darth Vader says, "I have you now."
When does he do that?
He does that in A New Hope, doesn't he?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have you now. Samantha, what's your favorite line from A New Hope?
My new favorite line is when Han Solo goes, "We're fine here. How are you?" That's
fine,
a great line.
We're fine here now. How are you?
That's actually one of my fun facts that John will hear when the podcast airs. Is that?
Because I wasn't on it.
Because you weren't on it. Han Solo, Harrison Ford improvised that line. He really wanted. Well. He
I
actually,
love how John corrected me on how that line goes. But anyway,
he was really like, he had this great quote. And I don't remember if I brought this up in the podcast, but he actually said like, "Well, sure, you can write it, Lucas, but you can't actually say it."
Samantha,
so,
what's your favorite line from the film?
It's probably the Han Solo. Yeah.
Really? That's your favorite
line? It's a great line. And he improvised it because.
What about Obi-Wan's line? "If you strike me down now, I'll come back stronger than you could ever imagine."
That's not a fun line.
It's not fun, but it's good.
Actually, I love Leia too.
What's
like,
the,
aren't you?
I'm
little,
not asking about characters. I'm asking about one line.
Aren't you a little small for a stormtrooper?
That's
a little short.
Short.
I don't understand though, like, because the uniform, you can't shrink the uniform. That doesn't make any sense.
It's a great line.
Anyway, John, what do you think of City Lights?
Remember when she's like lying there and she's all like cool and calm, like she's been tortured, man, and she's so cool.
It
doesn't affect the lines.
I'm going to give City Lights a D+. Let's go with
that's
D.
Fair.
That's so fair. John,
thank you so much.
Thank you for being on this call. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Bye. Anyway, Michael, what grade do you give this film?
Well, we gave the last film an F. And this film is better than that film.
Yes.
Not a lot better.
No, but I still understand it more for the AFI purposes.
It's not even as good as other silent films, and as I've discussed, it actually makes me dislike silent films. as a medium, especially if sound was coming into its own. If it was a real thing. I'm gonna give it a D minus. I don't give a shit.
I'm gonna agree with John and give it a D plus.
I feel so good about my D minus. If it could have been sound, and he's like, sound. No, fuck you. Sound is great.
Fuck you.
And here's the thing that we also didn't discuss. We're like, I have said before about Charlie Chaplin's other films, like, well, he composed the music. That's so good. But I wonder, because he does, I think he just takes a bunch of classical music and just kind of shifts it together.
Fun fact about that.
Yeah.
He actually took a song, the very famous Flower Girl song. It has a name, but I can't think of it. He took it without permission and actually got sued for it.
Thank God.
Had to pay a bunch of money.
He got sued because he like didn't credit the person.
He didn't credit them. Yeah. And yeah, owed a lot of money.
So I mean, I don't think he's even that talented in this film. So I just feel so good about D minus. Who are we sponsored by?
Netflix.
You're going to want to pay him $100. So Disney Plus is coming out in September. And you can buy... September, yep. And you can subscribe to them for $7 a month, which is cheaper than Netflix. But here's the thing. They don't have Stranger Things, all right? They don't have Arrested Development. They don't have Ozark, okay? And how are you going to watch those shows? Netflix. That's the only place you're going to go.
For real.
It's a place for mature, elevated, artful content. Do you have anything to say about Netflix?
No, that was just so good.
Queer Eye! You're not going to see that on Netflix.
Sorry.
I love Queer
Eye. Okay, you're excited about the show. Well, it's good.
That was just a really good plug for Netflix. I was just really impressed by you supporting our sponsor.
Yeah, it's not a lot of comedy. do you have a joke?
No jokes.
Fuck.
I like this film. I have no jokes.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, join us next week when we talk about The Wizard of Oz.
That'll be a very good podcast. Yeah. Robin Williams was ever hot?
No.
Yes.